This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back about 20 and change into hour two, and we're going to get Tony to join us in a minute. And I also got to talk to Tony about his contemporaries all three of them, actually. We didn't get to Glenn. We still have to find Glenn Corbett, too, by the way. But Jose Ferrar and John Court, they're still. You know, chasing down Tony. They got a ways to go. But Tony Black joins us now. Tony, good morning.
I'm just leaving the diner. I went and got my COVID shot this morning.
Nice.
And I didn't have a chance to listen. I was in line. But you know what? It's unbelievable how quick they move it along. And then I met my little boy and Kylie up here at the diner on the way back from the COVID shot. But I heard just now you talking about them old jocks, Corbett, Brer, and I rode a lot with Jose when he used to come to parks. I was so proud of him, the way he rode in the Tampa Bay Derby. He did a heck of a job. We're proud of him. And you know what I just did? I left my keys sitting inside the restaurant, but that's all right, because Kylie's there. She's paying, but you know what you did for me? She's paying the bill, because I told her I got to do radio.
I'm not going to keep you. I won't keep you that long, but that is pretty funny. Where are you? At Ponzio's? Which diner?
No, it's called it was the Westmont Diner. It used to be on Maple Avenue and Haddon Avenue, and the Greek that owned it, and these Greeks, they know how to run a diner. He wanted a bigger diner, so he moved to what used to be called the Crystal Lake Diner. It's now the Westmont Diner. Beautiful place, big. And I was talking my Greek to him. He loves it. He might have even come to me when I got done talking Greek. he used to come to the track once in a while, so he loves horse racing. So I go in there and, you know, talk a little Greek, and I didn't tell him I'm not riding anymore. In fact, they're waving to me goodbye. The Greek lady that waited on us just said, "Nice seeing you." And I thought, like, "Kalimera," that means good morning.
Look at you. I love it. That's so great. I got to tell you, you know, as far as Equibase is concerned, you're still active. They still have an asterisk by your name on the all-time list. So they're considering you active.
And you know what? They're going to see me win a race not too long from now. And I know I'm going to win one in September, because I'll turn 70 years old and I'm going to win a race. I already told Richie Vega I'm picking the horse. I'm not letting you pick the horse, because my opinion's better than the trainer's opinion. He'll pick something. He'll say, "Oh, this horse will really run good." And I'll say, "Yeah, right. You know, you said that to me too many times. I'll tell you the ones that are going to run good." So I'm going to pick a horse in September, and that's September 4th, I turn 70, and I will be active, and you will see me win a race. And I'm going to tell you what, Steve, I worked some horses before this pandemic, and people couldn't believe that you looked the same on a horse as you did when you were riding every day. But as Jose and these older riders were telling you, you have some things going for you when it comes to experience. Number one, you've totally eliminated anxiety, you know, which anxiety is an athlete's biggest opponent at times, because anxiety burns up energy, and it doesn't use your physical makeup and your energy efficiently and effectively. When you don't give a damn and you're like relaxed, you don't burn up energy, and you're more efficient and effective because you utilize yourself in a way that makes you more effective. And then you also take good care of yourself when you get to a certain age, probably better than at times I took care of myself when I was in my, well, let's say 30s, you know? you eliminate some of the evils that you thought were good at the time. And, you know, when you live a healthy lifestyle, good nutrition. And I tell you what the other thing I've done. I've gotten into competitive with my youngest son. And we go to the gym just about every day. I think in the last 31 days we've missed 3 days because we give ourselves a chance to build up after we work out. And if you saw me now, I look physically like I've been riding every day. The muscle tone is there, and we work on respiratory fitness. And, in fact, when we get done now, he's walking out here with his mom. And he brought me my keys. And I need my keys, Kai. Oh, they're on the table. She left my keys on. She's worse than me. She left my keys on the table. How did she think I was going to start this car and get home? And maybe that's the plan. She don't want me to get home.
Unbelievable.
But you know what, those guys, I'll tell you one thing, really, when it comes to being a jockey, I mean, it's a highly physical athletic event. But as you mature, and let's say mature, I don't want to say as we get older, and we're in our 50s, 60s, and 70s, we do learn how to use ourselves more effectively and efficiently.
There's no doubt. And, you know, I'll ask Corbett the same question I asked both Jose Ferrar and John, and you'll get the same answer, I'm sure, from him. You know, did you expect 15 or 20 years ago at the age of, you know, as you got to be, you know, approaching 40, did you expect that you'd still be riding at 55 or 60 years old? And their answer was no. Whether it's improvements in diet and you know, the ease of which you've got information at your disposal, and outstanding athletic equipment in terms of training, and you always hear Mike Smith talk about, you know, how much easier it is, you know, to be aware of you know, your body, you know, your body fat content and all that kind of stuff, and you know, all the things that you monitor. It's amazing. They both agreed that they never expected to be riding this long.
Man, you know what? I thought, I can remember back, you know, and I thought turning 40 was a big deal, and I was still out there on the racetrack. And you came up with the great age, and I thought, man, I'm still out here at 40. I used to tell everybody, man, I'll be 41, and I was still riding. I'll be 43, and I was, and you don't let that age as an athlete start to put a negative seed of thought in your mind that you can or you can't do it. Because, you know, I know in years past, riders got to be 38, 39, 40, and they packed it in. They had been riding 20 years or so. My uncle rode from 48 to 67, so he rode 19 years and packed it in. The thing of it is, don't let that time be a prerequisite in your mind of when you're going to quit. Don't let that age be a negative thought. It's not. If you're in good shape and you've healed up, and if you do ride 20 years or 30 years, you had to heal up and hit the ground a multitude of times. But you don't let that age and those injuries hinder you, you know, and talk you into quitting. When I wound up at the age, I guess it was in 2014, 2016, where I stopped becoming an everyday rider, it was more because I have two young children, and I have a daughter that needs my 100% attention, and it just became tougher to balance home and my life with a young family and a business. And I said, you know what? I've had this business be my priority for so many, 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 many years. I'm going to make my daughter and my young family be the priority. And I was able to walk away from it as a everyday rider, but still keep my foot in the door. I still do, you know, interact with the people at the track and get on horses when this pandemic's over. Going to be getting on horses. I enjoy that. In the meantime, I go to the gym every day to stay fit. But, you know, your injuries, as an athlete, I feel that because of the shape we're in, you know, you heal pretty good, and the when you do the rehabbing after the injury because of the shape you're in, you take it seriously. And I dealt with rehabbing when, you know, I've got a plate in my collarbone, I got a plate in my right arm, and I got a plate and 15 screws in my right shoulder. And, you know, those things healed good, but the rehabbing was so important. The one thing that was the toughest to rehab, it wasn't like a broken pelvis or a broken ankle, that I've done that, and all those broken bones. You know, I don't even count fingers, nose, and toes. They just are nothing. Ribs don't even count anymore. But when I rehabbed that shoulder, I thought to myself, man, I'm going to have to get this plate and these screws taken out. This thing drives me crazy. And for about the first 6 months, almost to a year, it drove me crazy. I went to the doctor. I said, you know, after about 6 months, I said, can you take this plate and screws out? He says, no, it's got to stay in a year, year and a half before we can take it out. By the time I got to a year and a half, I'm talking to him one day. He says, you know, we can operate and take it out now. I says, why? It doesn't even bother me. He says, well, I told you it wouldn't after that amount of time. So I left it in there. But the rehabbing for injuries is so important if you take it seriously. The one rehab I went to, it was like, you know, for some one injury, I said, this is a joke. I can do this at home. And I found a comprehensive sports medicine rehabilitation center, and they did rehab like they would do it to an athlete. I mean, they made you hurt. They made you move. They made you utilize yourself. And I thought at the time, now this is rehabbing. It's not comfortable, but it works. And it was the truth. And it helped me rehab injuries to the point where they don't bother me now, because I rehabbed them in a way, and they healed in a way that they're supposed to, and you're healthy. And that's the whole thing with riders. If they can rehab injuries and they can live a healthy lifestyle, 40 is just a number. You know, I look at myself and say 70 is 40 to me, where they used to say 40 is, 60 is like being 40. Well, you know what? 70 is like being 40.
Well, you know, you pretty much carved your own path, too, because, you know, you decided to have essentially three different families.
You got two or three divorces in the works, you might have two or three different families. That's part of the experience of growing and learning. And sometimes I look right now and I say, man, I didn't learn too good. I'm not sure.
Well, but, you know, it's amazing the thing that you referenced, Tony. When you broke, and for people that forget that when Tony, you know, he broke the ball socket, the inside the shoulder, which was a crazy injury. I mean, to break the ball joint there, I don't even know what it's called. You had to think, you know, at the time I remember thinking, well, this is not going to be easy to come back from. And he comes back from it. Mike Luzzi with the shattered pelvis. Thought 51, 52. How's he going to come back from that? Jose Ferrar had one. I mean, he went through the litany of the specifics. John Court, knock on wood, has been able to avoid a major, major late career injury. Well, even Perry Utes had the motorcycle accident. He's lucky to be alive, and he came back, whatever it was, 8 months later. Not to downplay what Victor Carrasco's gone through, but we talked to Victor a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, Victor at least has got youth on his side when he had, you know, a serious injury. And so, you know, in terms of the healing. But, you know, the reality also is there's certain people that are fast healers, and you've always, I've always gotten the sense that you were one of these athletes that healed very quickly and, you know, twice as fast as any doctor expected.
Absolutely. I can remember sitting there in front of a doctor after I fell one day and I broke my my thoracic vertebrae, T5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He says, you don't even have a T7. He said, it's totally obliterated. He says, the only reason you're not paralyzed is because they didn't penetrate the spinal cord. The bones swiveled down and didn't go into the spinal cord. He said, but Tone, this is it. You know, and this was a doctor that operated on me, like when I broke my foot, when I broke my arm. You know, he operated on me. So I said, yeah, we'll see. And I never let that negative seed of thought say, Tone, This is it. Kylie, she's crying. Like I tell the story, I always add this to it. And I've told you this before. Kylie's sitting there crying because she's seeing them big checks fly out the window. But I shouldn't say that. That's mean. But I said, well, we'll see, Doc. You know, we'll see what happens. He says, no, this is it. Well, you know what? He says, I might, when the swelling goes down, maybe to get you up straight, we might have to put a rod in your back to get everything in line. I said, yeah, we'll see about that, too. And they put me in a brace, and I lived in that brace, and in 5 months I was riding. And my back's never bothered me. My back has never bothered me. I guess you don't need a T7. That's the way I look at it.
Oh, my God. Too funny. Too funny. Tony, before we go, and I'll let you go get your keys and get out of there, I sent you that link to Benny South Street. Ryan Flanders had the funniest little video clip that he found.
Yeah.
Did we figure out who the jock is? That
It was the second race, and it was Angel Castillo won the race.
Right.
I was on the inside of Jomar Perez. Jomar, yeah. And I really cracks me up when I saw the video because, you know, at the end of the race, as they're crossing the wire, Angel looks back at something. I don't know if he's looking back at his horse's right hind or he's looking and saying something to Jomar. But all of a sudden, you see Jomar throw his stick at Angel. And I'm thinking to myself... And you know, it's the truth. I've seen, you know, you see jockeys drop sticks. I've seen jockeys hit each other with their sticks. I've seen a jock, it was R.J. Martin riding in Maryland when he was making one of his many comebacks after being ruled off, and he's sitting next to Nathan Plotkin. They're coming to that, to the, around the turn to that of the stretch. Nathan Plotkin, I think he still had the bug at the time, dropped his stick, and R.J. Martin said, "Here's mine, take mine." And he hands his stick to Nathan Plotkin. Well, of course, R.J. Martin, I think he got 30 days for that. And I don't know, Nathan, for taking the stick, got fined or something. So I've seen jocks hit each other with a stick. I've seen jocks hand each other their stick. And now I've seen a jock throw his stick at the other jock. And I'm wondering what Angel Castillo said. Did he provoke him? Or was it just something out of frustration because he beat him? He threw his stick at him, and that's a first. I've never seen that before, but you know what? Like I said, Steve, I've seen it all right now.
But anybody, do you ever?
Yeah, I asked a few people. You know, has anybody got any insight to this thing, or what transpired, or what was said? Give me some details. And nobody knows nothing. Even Kylie, when Kylie came home from work, I said, "What was said in the dining room? Anything said about this?" She said, "About what?" I said, "About it."
You wouldn't have seen it unless I'm sure you wouldn't see it. I doubt that on the pan anybody saw it. Yeah. It was when Ryan was looking at the head on that he picked up on it, and it really people appreciated it, frankly, because it shows you know it's competitive spirit.
Competitive spirit,
yep.
and the desire to win, and there's nothing like a jock's desire to win. If you don't have that desire to win, or you don't get the big thrill out of winning, I don't care if it's a $3,000, $2,500 claimer, or a $400,000 or $1 million race. There's a thrill of winning that's one of the most fantastic thrills that you can witness as a jockey, and if you you can be part of as a jockey, and if you do not have that thrill in you when you win, then yeah. You know what, you might as well quit, my friend.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, you hear that, riders say that, you know, that if they...
When I win a race in September, you're going to see the big thrill because it's been such a dry spell because I haven't ridden much since several years, but... And when you see me dismount, I'm going to jump that saddle like Frankie Dettori. And when I hit the ground, I hit it with a split. And you'll see it, Steve. You'll say, how does this guy do a split like that after riding a race? But that's the kind of shape I've been able to maintain. And I'm proud
amazing.
Of myself.
It's amazing.
And somebody says, what do you do that for? I said, well, I've been fit since I was a little kid. I wrestled my way through high school. Why quit now?
That's the famous Tony Black move, and everybody looks forward to it. The one thing that's going to be different is it's not going to be Keith Jones describing it, though.
And I really miss Keith. Not that I, you know, had anything that when it comes to the present day announcers, they're the greatest announcers too. I saw a picture of a friend of mine standing with Durkin, yeah, and I thought, man, what a giant in his field. And Keith Jones, what a great announcer. I used to listen for his voice at the head of the lane if I was in front, because then every once in a while he'd say, and so coming up on the outside closing ground on Tony Black, and then I'd get busy. Keith was the best. If the wind was blowing right, you could hear him at the quarter pole. But I miss Keith. He did a great job, and I believe they only had a couple of announcers since Keystone. They had two or three. They had Jack Lamar was the first announcer there. Then I guess it was Keith, and once in a while they would have the guy from Jersey fill in. What the heck? I can't think of his name.
Larry Letterman.
Yeah, Letterman. Yeah. And he
Larry Letterman, and also, you know who else called a couple of races was Pat Cummings would call some races.
Yep, Cummings and Letterman. Letterman had a unique call. I'll never forget one day Letterman called me at Atlantic City, and he was doing Philadelphia. Well, it was Keystone or Philadelphia Park. I think it was Keystone, maybe Philadelphia Park. And he called me one day at the Jocks Room in Atlantic City. He said, listen, he says, you won two the other day at Philadelphia Park. He says, you won three last night here, and you're on. And then I'd ridden two of the four that I was on, and I won two. He says, that's number seven. He says, you know, I think you're going to be doing something if you win the next couple. And that's how Letterman told me. Well, the next one won, he called me. He says, nine's the record, I think, Tone. Nine's the record. I won the next one. So it was nine consecutive wins in three cards in 2 days. And he put me wise that, and I'll never forget it. So the next day we went back to Parks. He says, you can break the record if you can win on the first horse you ride. So Minotti Aristone's brother, Phil, called me. He said, listen, I got a horse in. His name's Can of Gold. He says, take off the horse you're on in that race, and maybe the stewards will let you ride my horse. You can't beat him, and he'll win. Can of Gold. I said, I can't do that, Phil. Maybe they'll let me ride him, but that's not the way the spirit, the record was set in, and I'm not going to engineer and manufacture a new record. I was stupid at the time. I should have. Can of Gold won, and I finished back a bunch of lengths. I could have had not 10 consecutive, but I missed my opportunity.
Well, that, and you know what? You know what's funny about that? And I'm just pulling it up.
1931 it was set.
Well, you were fifth on Superbird.
In that race?
Yep. Yep.
And Canna Gold won it.
Yep, for Phil Aristone with Rafael Pena. Rafael Pena won by a nose, actually. Won by a nose as the favorite, 5-2.
Yeah, Matt probably got beat a nose.
August 1st, 1992.
Yeah, that's what it was. But it did make the Guinness Book of Records in 1993, I think it is, because they sent me a book of records, Guinness Book, whatever year it was. And I'm in there because I had tied the record. And the record was set in Marlboro, Maryland, I think in 3 days by a jock named Richards. His last name was Richards, and he had won nine consecutive. But that was like in 1932 or something.
How about that?
Yeah, and I thought, well, you know, at least I tied an old record.
That's a great, tremendous accomplishment. And one of many, 5,200 and change for Tony Black. And Tony, go retrieve your keys and get out of that parking lot, and we'll talk next week.
And I'm sitting here on the hill where I parked my car one day when we were kids at this, when this was a, Crystal Lake diner, and I almost went over that hill because it was a stick shift, and I wasn't real good in driving stick shifts. And I hit neutral instead of reverse to back up off of the hill, and I almost wound up over the hill. But well, I didn't. And I parked in the same spot I was parked about 50 years ago when I was. When I was whatever I was, 16 or 17. I don't even know if I had a driver's license. All right, you take care, Steve. Keep up the good work, and thanks for the time, buddy. Bye.
Always tremendous. Tony Black, who's never going to be over the hill, even approaching 70. Too funny. Steve Haskin is standing by, and he's actually not far away, really, from Tony and in Hamilton Square. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
Tony just regaled us, as he always does. he's the best.
He's always got a story.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And some of them are true.
I would hate to think so. I mean, you know, the ones you make up are always more interesting.
No, not in racing.
You like things to be part of folklore rather than lore.
Well, he's got it. He's got it made. I knew it would be fun to in the wake, you know, yesterday with John Cord and with Jose Farrar, you know, who are 56 and 60 respectively, and you know, still trailing Tony though in career wins, but in the top, you know, in the top 60, 70 all time.
If legend becomes fact, stick with the legend.
Print the legend, right?
Print that's the legend.
That's the saying. Well, you know, speaking of legends, and I sent out that link to the 17-minute preview of the Viva Canyonero film. And, Steve, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, actually, that documentary was made more than 10 years ago. And that movie, which was supposed to be made several times, sort of fell through. But there is, which I can't disclose, but there is something big that's already been signed. There is a deal already made, which I can't get into specifics right now, because the Salomon, signed something, so he can't say anything until
sure.
They are ready to put it out. But it sounds like it's going to be really, really big. It sounds like it's going to be great. But you know he signed a non-disclosure agreement. So, but it, you know, when it's announced, it'll be announced. But I thought he did a terrific job with the little mini documentary.
It's fun, when you know seeing those, you know, the film clips too of the races, and you know, there's always, when you do those, there's always things you forget, and there's little elements of the story that emerge, you know, that have been obscured by history, and so it there's always something fresh whenever you watch it. It was a lot of fun.
Well, on the first Saturday in May, if you had asked me what is the biggest shock that you've had in racing, not that I had been in racing that long, but if you asked me what the biggest shock was, it would have been Canyonero's Kentucky Derby, where nobody that I know knew who it was when he crossed the finish line. Where everybody said, who is that? I mean, I had no clue who that horse was. And he was the worst price in the history of horse racing, because he's a horse that was 500-1 in the future book a week before the Derby, and would have been easy, way over 100-1 as a separate betting interest. But back then they had the mutual field, and they had
right.
Eight horses in the mutual field, including him, and they went off at 8-1. The worst. It was the worst price on. I mean, we're talking a $200 horse here that paid $18.
That's a good point.
I mean, it was just crazy. But if you had asked me then the biggest shock, it was that horse winning. That biggest shock was replaced 2 weeks later. Here's a horse that came from 20 lengths out of it to win the Kentucky Derby. A horse with, like, no speed, just plodded along. He was running. He was, like, 19th in a 20-horse field, over 20 lengths out of it. And he draws off to win. And I remember going into the Preakness and saying, well, there's nobody to run with Easton Fleet here. I mean, you know, Easton Fleet had run, like, he ran a good fifth in the Derby, but he had hooked his own stablemate, Bold and Able, in there. But he had won the Florida Derby very impressively. He was a very fast Calumet horse, and there's nobody to run with him. I said, well, you know, Canyonero, he's not going to win this race going back to a mile and 3/16 in a smaller field with only one speed horse in the race. And they break from the gate, and Eastern Fleet goes to the front, and, like, within an eighth of a mile, Canyon Air was going head-and-head with him on the lead in 46 and 110. And I'm saying, what the hell is this? You know, what are we looking at here? And the two of them go head-and-head the entire race through those fractions. And they come to the stretch, and one of them had to crack. And it was, I didn't want to say crack, but one of them had to assert himself, and it was Canyonero. He drew off, and he broke the track record. after winning the Derby in slow time, and he had worked for the Preakness. He had worked five furlongs in 105 and four Preakness. I mean, he was just like a plotter, and he's going head-and-head in 46 and 110 in the Preakness. And that's when you knew that this horse was an absolute freak, and he never should have run into Belmont. He had so many things wrong with him. He had an infected hoof. He had thrush. He had a skin disease. And Sports Illustrated, which they had never done before, had an editorial pleading with the owners not to run. Dr. Reed in New York said the horse was at best 70% for that race. But, they had to run, you know, because it was the owner's dream, and they thought this was a horse of destiny. So they had to run him. And he went to the lead. He was at the lead until the quarter pole. And he finished fourth. He only got beat up two lengths. I mean, he actually ran a terrific race. And then he was out for the rest of the year, and they sold him to King Ranch. And the thing is, just to get into that story more, I mean, the following year, King Ranch ran him, and he was just an ordinary horse. They tried him in the Met Mile, the Carter Handicap, and allowance races. And he was just an ordinary horse. And then later in the year, they brought his jockey from Venezuela back, Gustavo Avila, who knew the horse as well as anyone. And they put blinkers on him. And the horse ran in the Stymie Handicap against River Ridge. It was the first time in years that they had two Kentucky Derby winners running against each other. And they hooked up, and they went head-and-head for like five furlongs into the stretch. And Canonero drew off and won by six lengths and set a new American record. I mean, it's an incredible story. It really was. But when you see what this horse had to go through, because, I had written, it's funny, in the documentary, they had me listed as Canyonero's biographer, which I was the only person I was writing about him. But since then, Milton Toby had written a book about him. And in fact, he had contacted me and asked, he says, are you planning a book? Because he knew I had written about him. Because he wants to. I said, no, go ahead. And he asked, so I wrote the foreword for his book. But when you read what this horse went through to get to the Kentucky Derby, you just won't believe it. I can't even get into it right now. It's just too long. But it's just a story that you can't make up.
Yeah, and that you well in advance of this scenario, you had always when improbable stories, have bubbled to the surface, whether it's a Mind That Bird or, anything that
is out of the ordinary. Mind That Bird at least was a 2-year-old champion in Canada. I mean, this horse, this horse sold for $1,500. He had a crooked leg. He had so many things wrong with him, when he sent him to Venezuela. People don't realize he's the only Kentucky Derby winner, by the way, to have won at a mile and a quarter before the Derby. And the weird thing about it is that he had won at a mile and a quarter. He had come to the United States as a 2-year-old. They sent him to Del Mar to run in the Del Mar Futurity to try and get him sold. And they ran him twice at Del Mar, and he ran okay, nothing great. But they had a deal. Charlie Whittingham was interested in buying him. I forgot for which owner. And they were, they were all set to make a deal. But nobody with the horse could speak English. And Charlie Whittingham said, well, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to buy a horse. I can't speak to anybody. And he backed out. So they sent the horse back to Venezuela. And he wins at a mile and a quarter. And his next three races in Venezuela after that were at 6.5 furlongs. it's just total craziness. I mean, he didn't even get to Churchill Downs until a week before the Derby. And he was just a mess. He had lost 70 pounds in quarantine. Traveled on a plane with... Every plane they put on, they had to go back to Venezuela. The first one, the engines caught fire. The second one, the plane had mechanical difficulties. They finally, the only plane they could get to fly to Florida, to Miami, was a train, or was a train, was a plane filled, it was Canyonero, and an entire plane load of chickens and ducks. And he's in the train there, he's in the train, why I keep saying train, he's in the plane there with all these clucking and quacking and feathers flying all over the place. And he gets there, they didn't have his papers, so he had to stay in quarantine for 72 hours, 90-degree weather. And then, it was absurd. And then they had no money to get to Louisville. They had not sent any money. So they had a van. They had to put him on a van and van him from Miami to Louisville. And the horse got to Churchill Downs, and he was an absolute mess. Every one of his ribs was showing. He had the craziest forelocks. He looked like Moe from the Three Stooges, you know, is exactly like that. You know, and he was just laughing. He's laughing stock. And when he trained, he would not train with a saddle. And every morning, Juan Avila, Juan Arias, would go into his stall and literally have a conversation with him and ask him if he felt like training today. And he'd go over and talk to the horse. And then if the horse said he didn't want to train, he wouldn't train. He would actually have a conversation with him if he wanted to train the horse. I remember before the Belmont Stakes, by the way, Joe Garagiola, who did the Today Show back then, Joe Garagiola came out to the track and literally interviewed Canyonero. He would ask a question and then put the microphone in Canyonero's face, waiting for an answer. It was craziness. It was absolute craziness. So you can imagine what this movie's going to be like.
Well, in the video,
starring the reporter in the movie is none other than me.
Excellent.
I'm in there. Originally my son-in-law was in the original movie. My son-in-law was supposed to play me. He was in California. He had a long talk with.
I remember this. You had mentioned this at the time.
Yeah. He was going to play me, but I'm still in there. He's actually expanding my role for this thing that's coming up. So, I will be what Bill Knapp was for the Secretariat movie or whatever movie he was featured in.
Well, and in fact, the Knack is included in that, you know, in the 17-minute featurette, and he fleshes out what a mess. And it's funny when Knack is describing Canyonero blossoming as the week went on, the horse that it reminded me of was Bluegrass Cat.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah,
because on Saturday
I wrote about that when I was doing Derby Doings for the Racing Form. I actually bet him strictly off what he looked like, because he had worked before, like maybe a week and a half or so, or whatever, before the Derby, and he looked terrible. He didn't work well at all, and he didn't look that great. And then his coat started blooming, and he went off at 30-1 in the Derby. I said, I got to bet this horse, and he runs second. The other horse, it was the same thing. Where he came, and I've never seen a horse's coat change so dramatically. Also, the week of, where he was dappled out and the coat was shining where it wasn't the week before, was Sea Hero, another big price. That was always the thing when I covered the Derby for the Racing Form. You got to remember, there was no HRTV or XBTV. Nobody saw workouts. There were no workouts. There was no show. The works didn't start until 2000. So all through the 90s, when I covered the Derby, the Derby doings, I would describe all these works, how these horses would work. That was the only way, you know, other than that, nobody saw any of these works. And if I missed a work, I couldn't write about it. I had to make sure I was running around and make sure I saw every work so I could report on it. It was a different game back then, because the workouts were really important, but most of my selections were based on what I saw, because I would go 2 weeks before and I'd watch these horses graze in the afternoon, watch their coats and see how their coats developed or regressed, and just see how they were doing physically and their workouts, And I had, I mean, I had a lot of horses on top based strictly on that. Smarty Jones, I know he was undefeated, but he turned in the greatest Derby work I had ever seen.
Right.
And Street Sense had an unbelievable work. I mean, these horses, I mean, and for the Derby, they let you know. They let you know how they're doing. And a lot of times they run to those works, and they'll run to their physical condition.
Well, one horse that we're going to be watching for works and for fitness level this year already, we know now. Let's talk a little bit, Steve, about the results of the weekend. And since we went on this bend, let's talk about Helium and the decision and the finalization of the decision yesterday by Team Cassie and the Greens, John Dad Len.
He made that decision a lot earlier than that. I mean,
yeah.
I was so taken with that horse's race. I said, whoa. Because if you remember last week on the show, we were talking about he's an unknown. He was a total unknown. We had no idea how good this horse was. And yeah, I watched that race, and I wound up watching it over and over again. I said, horse is not supposed to do this. So I called Mark Cassie on Monday. And, you know, we're going to all the things. He told me the whole history of the horse and went back to, you know, all the setbacks he had. And, you know, he had a whole bunch of setbacks. He was supposed to run the Gray Stakes at Woodbine, and it got canceled because of the snow. Then he was supposed to run again, and it got canceled because of COVID. Then he was in Florida. He was going to ship to Fairgrounds to run. And he wound up with a wrenched ankle, and, he just couldn't run. He comes into this race after a 4.5 month layoff, never been on dirt, never been around two turns. He gets six wide on the first turn, going into the first turn, six wide around the whole turn, six wide down the entire backstretch, five wide around the second turn, and then he like cuts the corner beautifully. Next thing you know, he's on the rail, and it looks like Hidden Stash, you know, who's a come-from-behind horse, for the first time in his life, changed his leads. And catches him. I said, all right, well, this race, though, he hit the stanchions a lot. When this horse came back to beat him, I said, how the hell did he do this? Not only did he beat him, but he started drawing away. He wound up beating him by almost a length. And I said, I got to call Mark Cassie and find out what the deal is with this horse. And he told me the whole history behind it. And I said, well, I'm really going to put this horse high up. This horse could be some kind of freaky thing. And I said, any idea which prep you're running him in? He says, well, he says, you know, we're thinking. I said, uh-oh. I know it's coming. As soon as he said that, I said, oh, no, don't tell me you're going to run her straight into the Derby. And he says, yeah, well, we're thinking about it. You know, I think we're going to just go straight to the Derby. And I said, oh, really? Okay. And so he started explaining to me why. And he's, you know, trainers now, you know, they train almost that. I don't want to use the word fear, but they're afraid of a horse going backwards. And they're afraid that this race took too much out of him and to run again. But, I mean, he's got 8 weeks. You come back in 4 weeks, and in 4 weeks, it's perfect timing. The Tempe Derby is perfect timing. But no horse has ever won the Derby off 8 weeks. So, and I told him that. I said, well, you know, you know the horse better than anybody. I said, just so you know, no horse has ever done this before. And I can't remember. I can't even remember. And I've been in the game a long time. I can't remember the last time the horse won the Derby, having never run a mile and eighth, coming off a mile and a 16th in 8 weeks. So I ranked him ninth in my standings, in my rankings, but, you know, I probably would have had him a little bit higher, but I don't know what to do with him now. I really don't. I think the horse is exceptional. I mean, listen, the time was slow. His buyer number was slow, but he got a 3 on Thoroughgraph. You know, which is, you know, pretty good. He got a big jump. So, you know, a 3 is pretty good.
Very solid.
It's right up there. You know, you run one more time, you improve off of that. You know, you get to around a 1 or a 0, then you're ready to, you know, ready for a big race in the Derby.
Sure.
But I don't know. I don't know what to make of him now. It's just
this came up yesterday, and now I'm trying to think of who it was that brought up the question. And immediately it struck me as a very fair and good question. In fact, let me look at yesterday's listing. It might have been I can't tell who it was. But the question arose, who's the last, when's the last time a horse went to the Derby off of one start at three?
Yeah. He got everything going against him.
When was that? I mean, this has got to be. It's got to be from the 30s or the 20s.
I listed all the things that he has, you know, going against him. And I'm not. There's no way in the world I'm going to second guess Mark Cassie. But the times have changed. The philosophy now is to get to the Derby and not win the Derby. There are a lot of trainers now. First of all, they want to get their owners to the Derby. There's one horse. I'm not going to mention the trainer or the owner, but you know, I spoke to the trainer, and he's looking to get into the Derby, even though he knows his horse has no shot. But he wants the owner to get to the Derby. So it's a good chance this horse might not run again for a while, until the Derby, because he wants to get in the Derby. He doesn't want any setback to make you think he's not a Derby horse. So that's the goal now. The thinking of trainers nowadays is that let me get him in the gate and hope for the best. You never know. Maybe he'll run a great race, and if he gets beat, the owners get to go to the Derby. That's what they want. That's what these owners come into the game for now. They want to go to the Derby. They don't care about other things. Sure, they want to have good horses throughout their careers, but the goal is to get to the Derby. And that's what a lot of training horses. They're training horses to get to the Derby. And it's the trainers that train to win the Derby that are the trainers that win the Derby. So, all you can do is see and wait, see what happens. But 8 weeks, one race, one two-turn race, mile and 16th, not even a mile and 8th.
I know. I get it.
I don't know what to make of this horse. I would rank this horse, pretty high up off that effort. Because, I just like everything I saw about him. There's no way in the world he should have won that race. He ran a mile and an eighth in that race. Now, Tampa Bay used to have trackers. You go on the tracker site now, and it says, Gulfstream in Tampa Bay, the trackers, they said that it doesn't exist anymore. So I don't know what happened there. But
they went to the they've gone to the they've gone to the Equibase system.
But I would love to have seen the number of feet that he traveled, farther than some of the other horses. But there was no way going into the race the way he was to go six wide into the first turn and wide the entire race, and to come back again like that, to be the closer, to come again. So,
he responded. He responded nicely. I brought that up with Jose Farrar at the end of the visit yesterday. Well, the horse is going to be forgotten in all this. I mean, the Hidden Stash is going to go on. Vicky Oliver will certainly go to the Bluegrass with him. But he's one of these horses.
By the way,
keep plucking away. Yeah, he keeps showing up. There was nothing wrong with his effort.
It's not only that, but I wrote in my last Derby rankings. I had him ranked last week. I did a Sweet 16. I had him ranked like around 13 or something like that. But I told him he gets a complete pass for losing this race, because I don't know if you saw it or not.
The pony thing.
And he was just a complete runoff.
Yeah,
he was a complete runoff. I mean, when I say a runoff, he was totally out of control. He was like throwing his head wildly around, and not only that, but he's running off on the rail, like he was in a European race, going the other way, and he's hugging the rail and he's throwing his head. And finally, the outrider had to come and get him, and for him to run the race he did, I said, well, that had to take something out of him. I mean, it had to. There's no way in the world you want to see that. It's not like the horse was just really too strong. He was out of control, totally out of control. And it was for a while, all the way up the stretch and around the turn and not down on the backstretch before finally the outrider grabbed hold of him. So to run the race he did, and not be able to finish off Helium, he gets a total pass for me in that race.
Well, you know, Tom, our friend Tom Herman, who you know we talk to a lot regarding the jump scene, and you know Charlie Fenwick owns Hidden Stash, and Fenwick said that he got all excited by the pony, and
oh, is that what it was?
Uh-huh, yeah, okay. Pony. The pony was a mare, and got Fenwick says that. Yeah, uh-huh. he got all stuck and all all distracted.
Oh, good for him. Yeah, that's good to know because you know that's not going to happen again. That is not that was just some kind of a freak thing. And on top of that, like I said, in his first five starts, he never once changed leads in five starts, and here he changed leads perfectly. So the fact that he changed leads. And the fact that he did get up there to catch this horse, and the fact that he couldn't finish him off, you know, I attribute strictly to him running off. And the fact that he ran as well as he did, to me, makes him a legitimate contender.
Well, we will get to see him again, and undoubtedly, you know, we'll see some others coming out of this that I'm sure are going to want to take another swing. Moonlight Strike. Got beat what four lengths and
he ran well enough. He had been working really well. Just like I've got him in my virtual stable, so I've been following his works. He's been working really well. So you got to give him another chance. Look, we're talking about these horses, but the fact is, the top three horses have separated themselves from everybody else right now.
Well, let's do this. Let's before we talk about Life Is Good and his effort, the. I want to get Jimmy, and he had to scratch on Monday, Jim Jerkins. So we'll get a chance to talk to Jimmy maybe next week. We'll catch up. We'll there's plenty of time. I mean, they're pointing for the wood, but
Jimmy's not going to be effusive and exuberant about things. You know, Jimmy's low key. I've been texting back and forth with Jimmy all year on this horse. Waiting for him, waiting for him to run because I loved his last race. I just liked the way he was progressing. I love his pedigree, and I love the fact that he's trained by Jimmy Jerkins. I just love it when Jimmy Jerkins, anybody named Jerkins, can get to the Derby. So we've been texting back and forth. He kept telling me that he's had these hoof problems and he had to miss these races and he couldn't run in it and he missed training. So. He comes in this race, and he had told me like a week and a half ago that he was running in an allowance race on the Gotham undercard. Then I looked and I said, there is none. So he was forced to run him into Gotham. He wasn't scheduled to run. He was supposed to run an allowance race. So, I'm sitting here, so I'm watching the race with Joan, and I'm watching him in the post parade, and I'm saying, and I look at the odds, and I see he's 30-1, then he's 35-1. And he's 45-1. I told Joan, I says, I got to put $2 on this horse. Just for the hell of it. And it did. I wound up with $90-something. I got to bet this horse only because I've been following him. And at these odds, I know he's a good horse. I didn't think he was going to win. Otherwise, I would have bet more. But I figured he'd run a good race and, maybe get a little thrill and you never know. Because you don't know how good these horse. You didn't know how good Baffert's horse was. And, Capo Kane's dropping back from two turns, and highly motivated, hadn't run in ages, and hadn't run over 6.5 for a long. So you just didn't know, and he's another horse I thought was beat. I was surprised that the horse that looked like he was going to beat him, the horse had one start in his life.
Yep.
But I thought he was dead. I said, all right, well, he's running a good race, and so I blew $2, and then he comes back again. And beats him in those, and I said, holy cow, I told the children, I said, I can't believe I just won $90 on this race. Joey bet I've made all year. I made a $2 bet on this horse.
Head for the year.
Yeah, but I'd love, it's in my account, so now I got money to bet the Kentucky Derby. That's all I was looking for. I got Derby betting money now.
We talked yesterday.
But he's got the pedigree. The horse has got an incredible pedigree. He's going to, and I went back to my first Derby rankings, back in January. And the first one, I wrote about this horse. And I said, watch out for this horse when he goes two turns. I mean, he hasn't even been two turns yet. But back then, I'm saying this horse is a two-turn horse. And for him to win at a flat mile like that, the way he did, so he could be a really, really good horse. Unfortunately, for some reason, there's no Thoroughgraph numbers yet on that race. I got all the Thoroughgraph numbers except for that race. But I looked at Brisnet numbers. He got a better number than Life is Good on Brisnet. He got a 104, and Life is Good got a 103.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I'm really looking forward to seeing the Thoroughgraph number on him. Just out of curiosity, see where they went with him. You know, Raggis number was, you know, okay, not great, not bad. It was okay. But I think this horse is going to be dynamite going two turns. I just want to see Jimmy Jerkins get to the Derby. I want to see Jimmy Jerkins win the Derby.
I get the sense. I mean, we'll talk to Jimmy, you know, the first chance we get, but you get the sense that it's, you know, not even close to a priority. They'll deal with the wood and they'll make a decision afterward. But I mean,
yeah. Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
He was
yeah.
more interested. They seem more interested in the Belmont. I mean, that's been their, you know, that was their
yeah.
immediate response. In the meantime, here's Chad and Crowded Trade kind of jumps in at the corner.
Where'd that come from?
Wow. Oh, that's you know, that was a terrific way to follow up the maiden win from January, and he's a more than ready out of a jump start mare. He's got kind of a middle distance feel to him, but we'll see what he can do going two turns, and then highly motivated, he'll go on. And Chad's also sitting with Risk Taking too.
That was my Risk Taking. I've had Risk Taking ranked in like number 5 and 6 since the Withers. I like everything about that horse. But Highly Motivated, I wrote, that was my under-the-radar performance. People aren't going to pay that much attention to it. That horse had a horrible, horrible trip. I mean, if you watch that race, Doug O'Neill's horse, wiped the slate, is coming out of the gate. He's constantly cutting in on him. Finally, he comes in on him and knocks him onto the turn, you know, at the gap, when it cross over, you know, from the chute, and they go past the turn. He actually is on the turn, and he completely had a steady and re-brake, and then he's like in a box. He's trapped the entire race, and finally got going. And you got to remember, he had been out. He had never run over 6.5 furlongs, and when he finally leveled off late, he was striding out beautifully. I liked the way he was coming at the end. And, you know, he's a horse that, again, I'm not sure how far he wants to go, but can't knock that performance. That's a performance that a lot of people aren't going to notice because there were 3 major preps, and you don't notice the horse that runs third too often. But he's one to definitely keep an eye on. I mean, a lot of horses coming out of this weekend that are very intriguing for the next start.
Exactly, and of course some will be, you know, some will be going back to one turning, like Freedom Fighter. Baffert said that on Monday.
A one turn horse. Baffert told me in January he was a one turn horse.
Yeah, but it was, you know, it was still worth trying, and that was
this was one turn. It was a perfect spot for him.
Steve, let's get to Life is Good, because I got a couple things yet to get to in the last half hour. And obviously, you know, any concerns about the one hole evaporated pretty quickly. The only vapor trail on this is the way he got out. And Baffert's unconcerned. Smith is unconcerned. I'm a little concerned.
I don't. Unless I know Mike Smith said that, you know, he got distracted by the big screen.
That was adorable.
Lights on a big screen. Maybe I don't buy it.
No.
I don't buy it for one reason. He was getting out, turning for home way before he got to the big screen.
Because I
was watching the race. I told you, and I said, boy, you know, for a horse, his mechanics were so great in his workouts, and you know, he's running with his head up, and I'm saying. Yeah, he runs with his head high anyway, but he's running with his head high, and he just sort of, his stride got really sloppy. And I'm saying, there was something wrong there. And the reason it got sloppy is that he's starting to get out. And he's such a big horse, he's a big leggy horse, you know, and he's got those, like, authentic, those big gazelle-like strides that you see in a lot of the intermischiefs. But it really took him a while to come out of that turn. He was distracted. I don't want to say he was distracted, but he was drifting out before he even turned for home, and that's why his stride got sloppy. And then he continued to drift out. So maybe the continuing to drift out maybe had something to do with the lights. I don't know, but he had never done it before. But he was drifting out before that. He was drifting out before he got anywhere near the lights. Mm-hmm. But he just, if you look at the head on, I mean, he was, by the time he crossed the finish line, he was closer to the outside rail than the and galloping out. Correct. Than he was. Yep. To the inside rail.
No doubt.
So, you got to watch out. I mean, he got a zero on Thoroughgraph, which obviously is good. Not central quality. Still got, he's still the only negative number of the year from the Southwest. I thought for sure he would get a negative number because of that. I saw that 107 buyer, and I said, I don't know. Like I said, he didn't even get the fastest push in that number. So, but, he got a zero, which is good. He's obviously, listen, he's a very fast horse. Baffert's been trying to slow him down all year. And you can see he works him alone, and he never asks him to do too much in his workouts. And he still works, 112s and stuff. He's just a very fast, classy horse. But he's only had three starts. Do we really know how good he is? And, when the horse drifts out that much, you'd want to see if he does it the next time. San Diego Derby will be key to see how professional he is.
Now, we'll get a chance. We'll get a chance on XBTV to see what goes on in the mornings. And by the way, I've got to give Kate and Bradar, Steve, is sent out an advisory. She rightly is saying she wants to point out to you that TVG The Works started in 2000 when it came.
I was there. I mean, I remember Frank. Frank even mentioned my name because I was doing the Derby. Nobody knew Frank at the time, and Gary Mandela was the third person that did it. And the entire backstretch was glued. They'd go into the trainers' offices to watch it. And you know what made that Works famous? One incident. It was great that people watched it. But what really put TVG on the map was that they had the only camera on Fusaichi Pegasus in the dark when he was coming back, and he got spooked. And he reared up, and he threw his exercise rider at the, Santos. He went straight up, and Santos slid off the back of him onto the ground, and he was loose. And Neil Drysdale had to come running onto the track to grab the horse, and nobody, because it was dark, nobody got it. TVG had the camera on the other side, and it was dark, so it wasn't the greatest quality, but you could definitely see it clear enough. And I was there. I saw it happen, and I watched it later on TVG. But that incident, the fact that they were the only ones that had it, and everybody was trying to get that footage for all the other networks, that put TVG on the map. That one incident with Fusaichi Pegasus, but that show really caught on. I remember it. I remember it as clear as day. I said, "Wow, this is the greatest thing," and that changed my whole coverage of the Derby, because like I said, before that Works, I was the only source of relaying workouts, what they look like. Now people could see for themselves, and I didn't have to rush to watch every workout. If I missed a workout, I'd just go watch it on the Works.
Yeah, that's true. That's and then then when we started, they started adding in the remote. You'd get remote contributions and California and Florida and New York. I mean, that has been the thing that has been most, most wholesale change, really, in the lead up. I can even appreciate, for me, I used to get it on Fridays when I would leave here. I would do all I could to get as far as I could get, and then get up early so that I could get there by Saturday morning. And now I can be a little bit more leisurely because I can slap the, even in the car as I'm driving, I'll
be watching. The show would go on at like 11 o'clock in the morning. where training was over and all the trainers would sit in their office and watch it, and I could go back to my hotel room before I started writing my daily column, you know, the Derby Doings column. I would watch the works and take notes and everything from anything that I missed and combine it with, you know, the works that I did see live. But you see it live, you can't see it as well as you did on the works. The works, I mean, close up right from the start. So that was that was a breakthrough in racing for sure.
Steve, life is good. Medina Spirit acquits himself solidly one more time, and Dream Shake and company are going to head to softer pastures, or
they're getting away from the belly of the beast. I don't think a lot of horses want to challenge this horse. But yeah, listen, he's still never been like authentic. He's never been challenged. You know, he gets out there and nobody's going to run with him. And what helps him, too, by the way, was that, Medina Spirit sort of, you know, ran interference from him a little bit going into the turn. And it looked like Medina Spirit wanted to challenge him because Mike wasn't going for the lead. Mike was grabbing hold of him. And he said, well, you know, we'll see what. He wasn't rushing him to the lead, let's put it that way. And it looked like Medina Spirit wanted to go after him. And it looked like Johnny V had to just keep him to the outside because he didn't want to go head and head with him, you know. And it didn't help the great one either, and he wound up losing ground going to the first turn. But as soon as he did that, next thing you know, Life Is Good had a 3-length lead going into the turn. We cut the corner, and that was it. Race was over. He still got 110 and change. You know, he's on cruise control, and he still got 110 and change.
No, this was. You know, other than the drift, it was very much a wow performance. Steve, we're going to get tight, so let me get you to shift gears away from the recap and into Saturday at Oaklawn. Take a quick walkthrough of the Rebel group.
Well, it's going to be a very fascinating race because there's a lot of things going on in this race. You obviously have the speed, you know, Caddo River on the rail. And now you've got another Baffert double-barreled entry in here. And he's got Hozier in there. And Hozier's, you know, two stalls away from him. And he's, you know, he's got good sprint speed. He was pressing the pace going 22 flat in his first start, you know, and he showed good tactical speed in the second start going two turns. And I think he's going to be up there because they don't want Caddo River to have a lead all to himself. And if you watch Concerts Tour's works, his last work, Baffert had him in company break off 10 lengths behind his workmate. So it's obviously that Baffert, you know, with only two starts, if this horse is going to be a Derby horse, he's going to have to really show. He doesn't want him hooking up with Caddo River, breaking from the rail. So I think he's going to want this horse to come from off the pace to see what kind of Derby horse he has. So it'll be interesting to see how Baffert's other horse, Hozier, if he runs with him or not. And then you got the question mark of Keep Me In Mind, who, you know, unfortunately, you know, had the Southwest postponed twice, and then he couldn't train. He didn't work for 18 days. And this is a horse, you know, that was really, really sharp. Deodoro had him razor sharp. I mean, he had two bullet works at 5 furlongs getting ready for the Southwest. He had gone a minute and flat and 59 flat. And then the race gets postponed, and then it gets postponed again, and then he can't work for 18 days. Then finally they opened the track, and he's had two works. He worked in 103.1 and 102.1. So I don't know what to expect. I mean, if we get some speed, if we get a contentious pace, it could set up for him. His speed numbers, his speed figures are pretty slow on all counts. But he certainly does not have to win this race. If he's closing in the stretch, you know, gets beat a length, two lengths or something like that, he'll be in good shape. But he really got messed up for this race. He was ready to run. He was sharp. And now, you know, now we'll see how he does in here. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out with Hozier. And even, you know, Ashmussen's got two in there himself. You know, Superstock's a nice horse. He's very consistent. He's a stakes horse. And, you know, the other horse he's got in post two, we'll see if he runs with him or not. you know, is that Big Lake, who showed, you know, pretty good speed in his last start at Fairgrounds and opened up a 6-length lead at the eighth pole and won by a half. So, you know, I don't think he's good enough to win this race, but I'm curious to see if he goes after Cattle River. And then you got the question mark of Get Her Number, who's been, you know, working great at San Luis Rey Downs. You know, he's a grade one winner. He won the American Faro. He hasn't run since then. But, you know, he's been working really well. In fact, he had a 1-12-2 work at San Luis Rey Downs. And so we don't know what to expect from him. So it's a fascinating race because there's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of things going on in this race.
Agreed. And looking, it's funny. I walked through it this morning, and you know, as I did, I said, you know what, this is as good or better than expected. Even though, you know, people were seemingly surprised or disappointed that it didn't draw a, you know, a 12 horse field, let's say. But there's
not
enough
to draw a 12 horse field. Just the Southwest was run 2 weeks ago.
Exactly. Exactly.
Three to six horses, and they're California shippers. Yep. You know, and you got Asmussen's got the Fairgrounds. He's got two Fairgrounds shippers.
Yep.
You know, so I mean, you got one local horse here, Twilight Blue, because any, you know, if you're a local horse, you ran in the Southwest. There's nobody left to, you know, and Cattle River, of course, but even Cattle River had to leave Oklahoma to go to Fairgrounds to work out. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting to see what we have here.
We should mention, too, Steve, in addition to the Rebel, just as a sidebar, I don't want people to miss.
Today, you mean?
Yeah, 444 today, the Gulfstream 8th,
yep.
And here is,
yep,
Prevalence.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Now, the thing is, you know, do you realize, by the way, if he wins impressively and they decide, you know, to go, let's say, to the Arkansas Derby, which they probably will, Do you realize how many horses conceivably could get into the Derby with three lifetime starts? You got Helium, which is one. Prevalence would be another. Collaborate, who's an absolute beast. I watched, you know, watch his race. His horse is a giant. He's going in the Florida Derby. Soup and Sandwich, Charles' horse, is going in there in his third start. Nikki the Vest is two starts and won the Gander Stakes. He's going in the Wood. Another horse that won last weekend, Team Valor horse, untreated, mm-hmm. Looked really good, winning, breaking his maiden at Tampa, yeah. And they're going to probably look for a prep for him. The California horse, Rockier World, the Candy Ride horse who won on the grass, he's going to go to the dirt now, whether it's going to be the Sandy the Derby or another race. You got Run Classic, you know, could go in the Louisiana Derby. Another horse, Otto the Legend, you know, another Three Chimneys horse could go in. We could have a slew of horses, you know, that would be making their third start. And if they do well, they're going to go into the Derby for three lifetime starts. So it's a totally different Derby now. These horses are all strangers. We don't even know what we're dealing with anymore. But I've never seen so many lightly raced horses that are going to go, that could go, conceivably go into the Derby with only three lifetime starts.
And you know, and then you fold in, I'm going to leave you to do the research today and tell us the last horse to run in the Derby off of one start at three.
Well, I can tell you a horse that won the Derby off no starts at three.
Sir, was it not Sir Barton? No, Broker's Tip.
Well, Broker's Tip. But I'm trying to think what year Broker's Tip was.
1933.
The most famous one. Who won the Derby? Whose previous start was the Hopeful?
Ooh.
And this is a very, let's put it this way. This is a very, very, very famous horse who won the Derby, whose previous start was the Hopeful Stakes.
It's got to be pre 1900.
No,
no,
no. I'm talking. It was post 1900 and very famous. Maybe one of the most important horses to have ever won the Kentucky Derby. Who maybe single handedly made the Kentucky Derby what it became.
Oh, the filly. The filly.
Regret.
The filly. Regret.
Yeah. Yep.
1950. That's pretty crazy. That's pretty crazy.
The funny thing is that you realize we're going back to those times now.
It's unbelievable.
We're going back to the times where you don't even know anything about these horses. Back then, horses would run you know, off nothing. Then, of course, you had to have three, four preps going in. Horses went into Derby off running 15, 20 times in their life. And now we're going back to the way it was in the early 1900s where we don't know anything about these horses.
It's pretty funny, and I'm just looking at. I just quickly pulled up the media guide because I'm trying to see if. Well, it's going to take some work.
By the way, the previous winner to win the Derby off four starts, I believe, was like Exterminator. I mean, I remember when it was time we said, four starts, you can't win the Derby off four starts. Now we're down to three.
That's pretty funny.
What about, not as talk about Brooklyn Strong. They run like in the Wood Memorial and then go in the Derby. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I guess if Helium could try it and Brooklyn Strong could try it. I don't know. You can't handicap the Derby anymore. Basically, handicapping has turned into guessing. You just have to guess who's the good horse who's going to be good on that day. How can you handicap horses going to the Derby or for three starts or for even four starts? You just don't know these horses well enough.
No, you got to speculate. And you got to look. You got to figure out who's fit and who you can rely. I mean, there's certain patterns from a training standpoint.
You got to watch the workouts. That really good morning show. You can watch some of the workouts there and watch them, of course, obviously, mostly on, you really get to see them on XBTV. But that's the only way you can handicap. See which horses really are progressing. Unfortunately, we can't see the coats and how coats are blooming, but got to use whatever tools you can get.
Well, it's edging closer. Steve, enjoy the Rebel. This was a lot of fun.
Too.
And we will talk next week.
All righty, Steve. You take care.
Steve Haskin, secretary.com, and his Derby Dozen, and more. We'll stay right here. We got 20 minutes. We'll spend 10 and 10 or so with Seth Merrow and with Papo Morales. And we're going to handicap. And so I'm going to reach over for the pad. And Seth, I think, is ready with some Gulfstream and Oaklawn action. Seth, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, First of all,
it really is. It is a new world. Go ahead.
Well, wait. I mean, you can't launch into anything because the first order of business is to congratulate.
Thank you, Mr.
Seth Merrow on Sunday for $50 and change. What was it? 54, 60 or whatever it was.
52, I think, and change. Yeah.
$52. Seth Merrow handed you a free passport to Rainbow Six Riches.
and riches in quotes, but I have said many times, I like when the mandatory in these jackpot bets pays off like that, because it paid $1,100 and change. So the first couple of legs were fairly logical, the last couple were fairly logical, and in the middle there was a $14 winner and a $15 winner, so you had to look for those a little bit. But hopefully a lot of people did what I did, put together a $50, $60, $80, maybe $100 ticket, and you walk away with $1,100. And I would rather see that on those mandatory days where a couple thousand people wind up with a nice chunk of change in their pocket, and they're walking around thrilled and talking to all their friends about it, and that money is going to churn right back into the game, as opposed to these days where they put together these skull busters of cards, and you get, three $30 winners, a $40 winner, and it's a handful of people, and God bless them, they walk away with $200,000. But again,
it's not even a handful. It's you know, it's the computer groups and you know, it's these the syndicate types that you know, that are just basically glomming off of, you know, and they're putting together tickets in the tens of thousands. It's a joke. I mean, listen, as a habit and practice, they are a shonder. They are a complete curse on the game. But as a betting opportunity, when you do have to play it, is on distribution day. And you know, that part we can accept. But the rest of it, it's disgusting, and it's hurting the game. And it isn't even debatable at this point. It's one organization that's catering to their hand-picked high-volume customers, period, and they're usurping their day-in, day-out retail customer by doing it.
Well, again, I will say it was fun on Saturday to walk away with the 11. And also, I will say, on Saturday, I followed the ticket. You know, I put the ticket out on Twitter early and put it out early when I was doing TV on Saturday afternoon. So then I followed throughout the day and said to people, okay, here's what's on the ticket in the next race. But there was some drama in the second race in the sequence. I singled a horse. Feel So Pretty. I think it was Feel So Pretty. The big favorite in the second leg. And it was a logical single. It was a logical favorite. And then they announced there's two late scratches. And on my handicapping, the two late scratches were the two horses that I had right underneath. So it's the two logical contenders. So now I'm sitting pretty. They're loading in the gate. I'm thinking, well, let's get this race over, get my single home, and then I'm multiple in the remaining legs, just to make a little drama. The gate's open, and Pete Iola automatically goes, Feel So Pretty breaks badly, six lengths behind the feet. At that point, you kind of feel like, oh, my ticket's done. And the horse kind of rushes up and gets close to the field on the back stretch, goes through the field on the turn, and then opens just a little bit in the stretch. But we've all been there. You know, oh, he's used up so much. She's used up so much that there's nothing left in the tank. It just turned out in this instance, she was just much better than the field, and so she won. So there was a little drama there. And then the next to the last leg, I had a horse that at the 16th ball, I was done. And a horse got shot out of a cannon and got up and won by a nose. So there was some drama. It was a fun sequence to kind of play and follow along with.
No, well done. I know Gus had it as well, and he was live to the one and the two, and they finished 1-2, and then I saw where you had hit, and it was a nice weekend. I had a big day Saturday at Santa Anita, which carried some people, and I was kind of overdue, frankly, for that kind of a day. So it really was a fun weekend. We got a little bit more of a narrow set of opportunities this weekend. However, let's dive in. We got about 5 minutes, Seth. I want you to hit on a couple of opportunities at Gulfstream and Oaklawn today.
Let me just leaf through Oaklawn because I love Oaklawn. I was kind of looking quickly before we went on. And let me see if I had something. Boy, I had a nice one yesterday, a first-time trip. It was first time moving down, but it was a horse by Treasure Beach at Tampa. That paid a nice price running second. And I don't know whether I have anything. So I mentioned the feature today at Oaklawn is kind of fun. I don't know whether I have anything clever, but I'm kind of going against the favorite in here. The feature, because Strike Power comes back. The Sound for Brad Cox, lately raced, may have some upside potential. So I thought the feature, the eighth today at Oaklawn, was kind of interesting. I went 6-1-3-7. I used the Sound. Morning line, I think Strike Power is the morning line. Seven Nation Army, the morning line favorite. Strike Power is next. But the Sound is 9-2 on the morning line. Lately raced for Brad Cox, but the season ender last year, triple-digit buyer. The comeback down at Oaklawn was a win. The buyer went backwards a little bit. But I think with the experience over the track, being lately raced, maybe still some upside potential there. I'll tilt in that direction over Strike Power, now trained by Steve Asmussen. The first start of the year was in the King Cotton, so now moves back into a little lesser optional claiming company. Although I think this is a salty field. And then Seven Nation was also in the King Cotton last time and, in fact, finished in front of Strike Power. I just thought Strike Power getting back to potentially what may be a drier track today. That said, I think looking at the forecast, I think they were supposed to have a little rain this morning at Oak Lawn and clear up in the afternoon, so hopefully it'll dry out. But I'll in that feature race today, I'll use the sound, and I hope there's still be a little value.
Well, said to me, Seven Nation Army looks it looks very tough in here, but all right, I'm putting you down for the sound, so it's fine. All right.
What, it's all about opinion, baby. It's all about
opinion. Right. That's right. That's right. What else? You got anything else? Anything else at Oakland?
The last race, I have a horse underneath that maybe if you're playing around, worth tossing in the mix. The last race, I have it 4-10, 2-8 into victory on top for Robertina Diodoro, who's having a great meet. Jewel Azul in the second spot for Kyle Broberg off the claim, so that's interesting. But she's my ride, 12-1 on the morning line. I thought the maiden break or two back was pretty good, and then they just got a little ambitious last time and moved up the claiming ladder a little bit. I think the move back down the claiming ladder for Ingrid Mason could make that one a little bit interesting. And again, I'm not sure how well we'll, you know, how close we'll get to that morning line, but we're 12-1 on the morning line. We get a little bit of value in the mix. She's my ride is kind of interesting in that ninth of Oakmont.
I would tell people to take a look too at Callie Nikki, the Arietta riding for Phil D'Amato on the outside, the 12, 8-1.
Yes. Yeah, I will not disagree with that. Yeah, I got the Oakmont experience under the belt last time. Yeah.
Nice. Anything in Gulfstream?
Where are my Gulfstream PPs? Oh, well, I'm sure you've talked about it already.
We just did, yeah.
Prevalence. Oh, when I heard the end of the conversation, he was talking about the limited number of starts, of course. Yeah, Prevalence. So he's going to be interesting just to watch from a story standpoint. Interesting there. But otherwise, if I had something interesting at Gulfstream, I'm just kind of leafing through. I don't know whether I have anything particularly clever in that one. The last race, the 10 horse, is a little bit interesting to me from Pletcher and Rapoli, but you're looking at 3-1. Now, it's a big field, and I'm not quite sure where the odds are going to shake out, but if that one holds at 3-1, future victory in the last race could be a little bit interesting on the maiden special to maiden claiming group.
We're going to talk to Papo, and we'll get a couple of form-to-win plays as well.
I heard yesterday they gave out Weyburn. That was a nice call. I did not see that one, but it was fun to root for Jimmy Jurgens, and that was a gutsy stretch run, too.
Very much. And, well, then yesterday, Papo with a pair of second-place finishes on in the 7th and 9th at Tampa. So we'll see what he's got today as well. But thanks for the Oaklawn pushes, Seth, and we'll be watching for you on Capital OTB TV.
Appreciate it. I'll be heading in right now. We're starting a little bit later this afternoon with now daylight lasting longer. The post times are moved back a little bit, so we'll kick off at about 1:00.
Over 60 degrees in the Capital District today.
I went out for a walk in the park yesterday before I went in, because yesterday I was covered some nighttime racing, so I had a 3:00 start time yesterday. So I was in the park, Saratoga State Park, at about, I don't know, lunchtime. It looked like a million people out walking. People can't wait to get out in the nice weather.
Well, people can't wait to get out, period. What have you had a vaccine yet?
With the change in the protocols, I went on a website last night, just kind of like out of the blue, and Saturday, I get the stab on Saturday.
Very good. Very nice. I'm halfway home, too. So, nice. Everybody, it's going to be, for those that were hoping for the best for Saratoga, feels like everybody's on track. So, nice.
Yeah, I was thinking that last night when I got so quickly. It was just out of the blue. I went on Wednesday, got an appointment on Saturday, and I thought exactly the same thing. I thought, you know what? Summer now is looking good in Saratoga.
Exactly. Well, and I had the similar experience. I got an email from Washington County and Warren County on Friday afternoon, and an hour later, I had a Sunday 12:30 appointment in Queensbury, and that was that.
Nice, so we're nice.
Well,
so we're on the way.
Our way.
We're on the way.
Exactly. Yeah. Seth Merrow, too, everybody on your Twitter, and Seth will be giving away $1,100 ticket plays like M&M's, baby.
I did like helium on Saturday, too, so I'll toss that out. Hey, helium was a nice play. You say you had a good day at Santa Anita. I had a nice day at Tampa on Saturday.
Nice work. Nice work, because there were a couple of spots that were moderately tricky. I blew it on helium. I mean, Mark Cassie reveals on the show that helium was running and managed to screw it up. I'm told, by the way, that your horse in the your 10 horse has scratched. The Pletcher, they're not going to give away that maiden for 50, as it turns out. So no help there from Seth, but that's all right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. It's not on the scratch page, but I pulled it up a while ago, so I got to refresh.
All right. Seth Merrow, everybody, and we'll catch up with Seth it's been such a crazy week. We'll catch up with Seth in full, and we'll try to convince him to budget some of those winnings toward the wardrobe next week. I've only got a couple of minutes for Popo. Popo can come in and actually take a couple of bows, because yesterday, two nice ideas from Form to Win. Danya's Magic, a square second, just got overhauled late by Princess Nina, but they were 1-2, as it happens. They were the top two for the race under the analysis. And then in the ninth race at Tampa, Baby Boomer at 9-2, also a good second. So some productive ideas yesterday by Form to Win. Good morning, Popo.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, it was an okay day. The first Exacta came back halfway decent. But I mean, the big
bucks.
Thing was, I just looked at those races for, you know, basically 2 minutes and just looked for to try to find a price horse to get involved, and was able to hit the front Exacta, you know, just boxing those two. And the second one, the value wasn't there, so I didn't play it at all. But, yeah, I mean, it's the best thing that we talk about using the app is just the speed that you're able to look at a race and able to identify contenders and players relatively quickly.
Well, let's do it again. Let's pick a race or two out for today.
I was looking at Gulfstream. You know, I was trying to go through and find some horses that were not the favorites and were dual qualifiers. I found a couple. Gulfstream Race 7, just going 8 furlongs on the turf. Now, without putting in any filters on Form to Win, it's already identifying the horses 4 and 2, Gallon Mass, who's 3.5-1, and then the 2, Thunder Ride, is 8-1. And then when I put in my own filter, those same two pop up. So I'm going to kind of mess around with the number 2 horse, Thunder Ride, at 8-1, in Race 7 at Gulfstream Park. Fits both credentials that I was looking for, both using the filter or not, on Form to Win. And then if you go to Gulfstream Race 9, we got a decent field of 9.
Mm-hmm.
There's a price horse in here that fits when I apply my filter, and that's actually when I don't apply the filter. The number 9, Gypsy Wife, 12-1 odds. I don't know if she's going to be good enough to win, but she fits on Form to Win. And I mean, we've got a good body of work to work with. She has 9 starts when I apply the filter. So, you know, we'll see what kind of trip she can work out from post 9, but I'll kind of mess around with her and maybe key on her in the exotics.
Talk about what did you do for a filter here, because it's an 8.5-furlong turf race, and we understand the 4 apparently. Okay, I'm told the 4 in the Gulfstream 7th, Galleon Mast has scratched the 4. So Thunder Ride is, well, but now it's down to a 6-horse field. I mean, this Gulfstream card's a little meager, frankly. But what did you adjust in terms of distance for the ninth?
I looked at races between 8 and 8.5 furlongs, just knowing that the Gulfstream turf course tends to play towards front end speed.
Yes.
And she was third on when I applied that filter, and she was a price. So that's what I'm kind of going to work around.
Okay. All right. Well, and I actually, when it came to Oaklawn, as Seth was talking, that's how I came up with that Cali Nikki in the ninth at just the 10-9-2, the D'Amato with Arrieta, 8-1 on the 12. That was in the ninth at Oaklawn. So there's a couple of ideas. And tomorrow we'll do a full-fledged weekend preview with Form Number Two Win, form2win.com. Download it. And next week we're looking forward to you being able to use two free races on a daily basis and get really accustomed to it. And, you know, then you can subscribe. We want people to really understand what they're working with, because it's powerful and productive. Papo Morales, Papo Core One, good luck today. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Hey, thanks, Steve. I'll be on Twitch today at 4 o'clock going to Form to Win if anybody wants to tune in. I'll tweet that out so you can like it or retweet it if you choose. But, yeah, I'll be just kind of explaining everything that we talk on the phone and going a little more into depth.
Excellent. I forgot it was Thursday. The week has flown by. Unbelievable. Papo Morales, everybody. Papo Core One. And I'll send out a retweet of his Twitch show later. Seth Merrowitz with us, of course. Steve Haskin, Tony Black for a funny segment, and Dick Powell. Dick is suddenly, like, for me, like the way I used to provoke Satish. Dick is I'm Satish when Dick is on with me now. Good luck today, everybody. Weekend preview tomorrow. I mean, the week has just flown by. 9 o'clock tomorrow. See you then.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.